The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I'm very proud to carry that banner to Oros and Oberon.
I am of Ireland. Come dance with me in Ireland.
Let us address the next 7 years with hope and courage as we work together to build a future for our country.
Yes, that's right. Patrick Gagan, director of the Trinity Longroom Hub and presenter of Talking History, of course, is back with me, continuing our series week two of same on the president in this country, the president of Ireland. We are going to be selecting a new one in a few months' time. And last week, Patrick talked to us about the ugliest races in presidential history. Today, Patrick, I understand we're talking about the office itself and the creation and then the evolution. So let's start with creation. We'll start with Genesis.
Let's start with Genesis. Well, in the 1930s, Eamon de Valera was systematically destroying and just dismantling the 1922 Constitution and the treaty and, you know, really asserting Irish independence. So as so much had been dismantled and removed, you know, you really needed a new constitution. So he began working on drafting a new one. And as part of that, the idea was to have an office of a president. And effectively, they were kind of mirroring the British system, where the British had the king, and it was the king who formally appointed the prime minister and met with ambassadors and all of that. And we would have the same kind of thing, except ours would be elected by the people.
So before we had this office, before Dev kind of created it for the purposes of the constitution, who was fulfilling that role? Who was appointing the Taoiseach?
There was a governor general, and of course that was hugely controversial. So De Valera again was getting around that by appointing someone as governor general who really had no interest in the role and he could bypass completely. But it was a grievance for De Valera and for a lot of the people on the anti-treaty side that you had this kind of king's representative in Ireland. So now, in a way, it was not entirely clear who was actually the head of state in Ireland even after 1937, whether it was the king or whether it was the president. And that was all kind of sorted out 10 years later at the end of the 1940s when you had the Republic of Ireland Act.
Well, was there any appetite for a US model where the head of state was the head of the executive? You know, that the Taoiseach would just be head of state.
De Valera seems to have had a clear vision of what he wanted, and he liked the British system where you had an upper house. There's the House of Lords. For us, it was going to be the Shannon. You had the lower house, which would be the Dáil for us, the House of Commons in Britain, but it would be the Dáil that would have the real power. Mm. And he liked the idea. Like, I think there are problems with the American system in terms of it working. And
yeah.
So the big fear in 1937 that people in Fine Gael on the opposition side had was that you were actually creating a dictatorship at the presidency. There were fears and claims that this was going to lead to a twin dictatorship because the president was perhaps going to be a dictator. The Taoiseach, this new office, was perhaps going to lead to a dictatorship. And a belief that the Taoiseach would only be the yes man of the president. And I think the biggest mistake an historian can make is to look back on the past with the benefit of hindsight and to have all this kind of superior assessment of all these mistakes. So, you know, no one really knew in 1937.
Yeah, can you then, as a historian who doesn't fall prey to those mistakes, Patrick, can you appreciate that argument that was being made?
I can appreciate
the concern
it
that they had about, you know, a dictator.
You know, things can be created, they may sound good on paper, and of course they can be turned into something terrible. So John A. Costello was a former Irish Attorney General. Of course, he goes on to become Taoiseach in 1948. But he led the attack on the Constitution and on all these provisions, accusing the presidency of being a dictatorship. He talked about how there is a prime minister in the Constitution who is a Taoiseach, and the word Taoiseach has been translated over the German wireless as Führer during the last few days. And then he said, you know, the government can be dismissed at the will and pleasure of the prime minister, Taoiseach or Führer, whichever you like to call it. So these debates were very heated, and it was like it's like listening back or watching back a Family Feud. Everything went back to 1922 and the Civil War and the split, and you're dismantling the 1922 Constitution, and shouts about you dismissed Donal Duffy and your blue shirts. And so it was very heated, but they're not really almost fighting about 1937. They're actually fighting about the Civil War.
Right, okay. So then the concerns people had, how did that manifest in terms of how ambiguous or otherwise the office was as described in the Constitution?
So they're fighting in May and June about all of this. It goes to the people in a vote on the 1st of July 1937, and it passes in a plebiscite, so a non-legally binding kind of referendum, and 56% of the country endorsed this. So now the presidency is going to come into effect, and now they have to find someone to fill that role. And both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael decide on the same person and agree on the same person, a candidate who won't be controversial, a candidate who will send out a very clear signal that this isn't going to be a dictatorship. Mm. And that person is Douglas Hyde.
And was there ever talk, before we talk about Hyde and what he did with the job, was there ever talk of an election? Like that the people would vote the first time round?
Well, there could have been an election, but in the end, Douglas Hyde was the only nominated candidate. And you know, the big fear that a lot of people had was that Eamon de Valera would put himself forward for president. And the fear then was that would the president have his own political party? You know, would there be a tension between the presidency and whoever is Taoiseach, and all of these things. So the fact that de Valera didn't go for it then and instead became Taoiseach, I think that was important as well, because it ensured that the role developed in the way it had been designed.
And I guess it was a signal, wasn't it, as well, that that certainly from Des' point of view, the power still lay in being Taoiseach,
exactly,
rather than president.
The power lay in being Taoiseach. And, you know, because again, people didn't know back then that you were going to have like presidents of the calibre of Mary Robinson and Mary McAleese and Michael D. Higgins. You know, they thought, you know, this could be maybe a little bit dangerous. So Douglas Hyde, well, he'd the founder of the Gaelic League, hugely respected figure in the Gaelic movement, someone who had lost his seat in the original Shannon in 1925, and that was a source of embarrassment. And he was a Protestant, and that was important as well, because it was sending out a signal that under this new Irish constitution, it was going to be a warm house for Catholics, Protestants and people of all religions.
So we have our first president in Douglas Hyde. What was his term of office like? Was this marred by any controversy? Was it plain sailing?
There was a controversy within a matter of months of him being inaugurated. He was inaugurated in June 1938. And in November, there was a huge controversy because he was invited to attend an international soccer match, a football match between Poland and Ireland in Dalyman Park. And he agreed to go. And he went with the Taoiseach Eamon de Valera. But the GAA had a huge objection to it, and this is the day, these are the days of Rule 27, the ban, and Douglas Hyde was a patron of the GAA, and so they
Could have done what Dev and lots of other people did and worn a cap and used a different name.
They dismissed him as patron. He was banned from GAA games, and like it was a huge, you know, de Valera was furious with the GAA. It was a huge, you know, I think, mistake. There's been some wonderful books written about it, but Hyde was a brilliant president. He showed what the office was, what it wasn't going to be. And so when he left office in 1945, it was really on very solid footings. But it's interesting, when he died in 1949, the Taoiseach and the members of the cabinet didn't attend the funeral because it was a Protestant service, and as Catholics, they were not allowed to attend. De Valera, then in opposition, didn't attend. The only cabinet member who went into the doors was Noel Brown, and the Taoiseach of the day, John A. Costello, and the other ministers stayed outside the church grounds, which really just shows you what a different time it was, and not a better time.
How did he manage the functions of the office in and around referring bills to the Supreme Court or a council estate? Did he ever do any of that?
Yes, he twice referred bills to the Supreme Court, and the first one was an offences against the state bill. And that was, again, one of the powers of the president, that you could test various aspects and test their constitutionality with the understanding, and it's very clearly set out in the Constitution, that if the Supreme Court finds it to be constitutional, then it can't be tested again. So it's a power that presidents have. They rarely use it, but sometimes it is there just to make sure that. So in a way, the president is there to provide these kind of safeguards, checks and balances to be able to test these things. But really, not a huge amount of real power. But again, if you didn't have the president, then there are all these kind of technical issues and that you wouldn't have someone in that role. So I think it is good to have it. And I think it is important to have someone who can be your head of state on the world stage and not to have them lumbered. And I think it works better than the French system, where really the French president is the dominant person and not the prime minister. In Italy, it's very much clearly defined as an elder statesperson, and you have to be over 50 going for it, and the tradition is usually that you just do one term of 7 years. But I think the Irish system, it does work, and it has worked over the years.
So to get nominated, people would be familiar with this from the last couple of runs, Ed. So it's the 20 Oireachtas members or your four county councils. You can renominate yourself as well.
You can renominate yourself if you are the president, and that's what Mary McAleese did when she was running for re-election. And I think that's important as well, because it means that, and Michael D did it, that means that you don't have to go through this process again, and you can run as an independent then.
Yes.
You're effectively beyond party at that stage, and I think that's very important. I think that was very cleverly inserted as well, because I think it would be difficult to have a sitting president going through that whole process again.
So let's then briefly talk about the powers. We mentioned the power to refer bills to the Supreme Court to test their constitutionality. They can convene this Council of State as well in terms of those discussions about whether to do so. Their Supreme Court Commander of the Defence Forces. I mean, is there any import to that?
I don't think so, really.
Just a title,
really. Perhaps if we ever were invaded or something. I don't really know how it would work out in practice, but I suppose in a way it's a bit like the American president is the commander-in-chief, and there's some kind of, but, you're leaving it to. The president has powers of clemency, and that's something that is rarely used. Has the power to refuse to dissolve the Dáil, and that's never happened, but it is possible that if a Taoiseach has lost the control in the Dáil, just no longer controls the majority, the president could say, actually, no, I refuse your request to dissolve the Dáil. There won't be a general election. Let's see if the opposition can put something together.
Yeah, and you were talking about Brian Lenehan and the situation he found himself in last week in the first episode of this series. What about removing or impeaching the president? So I remember there was Dana ran twice, and in one of those campaigns, and people have forgiven me if this is a bit fuzzy or not entirely correct, but she been asked about whether she would sign legislation that relaxed rules around abortion. And I remember she wouldn't entirely commit to doing so. She couldn't in good conscience commit to doing so. And then there was a question about whether, she'd actually have to be removed from office, were that to happen.
And there actually is a provision where you can impeach and remove a president from office. And again, I actually had forgotten all about this, maybe I wasn't even aware until I was going back again and looking at the articles. And it's a power that's never been used. I don't think we've never come close to even considering. But the Supreme Court, and it requires a minimum of 5 judges if they find the president to be permanently incapacitated. And the Oireachtas has the power to remove a president for stated misbehaviour. But I think it needs 30 members to move the motion and then in either the Dáil or the Seanad, and then it requires 2/3 support in that chamber. And then the other house investigates, and they need a 2/3 majority to remove. So it would require 2/3 effectively of both the Seanad and the Dáil. So it, I think, would have to be a very serious case. But you never know. Like, you could in some future point have a president elected, and then something comes out where, they're maybe receiving, money from a foreign power, or they are involved in some major scandal, and that there's something, incredibly disgraceful emerges. And then it shows that, we don't have to wait you know, till the end of the 7-year term, the Dáil, the Oireachtas would have the power to remove.
There's kind of funny rules as well about they can't leave the state unless they get permission. Is that right?
That is a funny one. Yes, you need permission of the government to leave.
To go on holidays.
And then you can effectively say whatever you want anywhere except in the Oireachtas.
Yes.
So if you want to speak to the Oireachtas and give a formal address to either one of the houses or both houses, then you have to submit your text in advance to the government of the day and they have to approve it. So Michael T. Higgins has never spoken to the Oireachtas. He's given many speeches over his time in office and he's always asked about it and he says no, because they would have approval
yeah,
over the text.
And they'd have the red marker out, I suspect.
I think he has done various commemorative things, but like a kind of formal event where you give the speech, whereas instead, of course, presidents now can give their speeches to all kinds of events.
So are there presidents then, before I let you go, and you know you're going to be back at the same time next week continuing the series, but are there presidents that are generally considered kind of the best versions of the role and consequently the worst as well?
I think Mary Robinson certainly transformed how the office was perceived. Up until then, it was seen as a retirement home for elderly politicians, usually of the Fianna Fáil persuasion, because after Douglas Hyde, they were all Fianna Fáil after that. And I think Mary Robinson invigorated the office. And then that was continued by Mary McAleese then, who had this phenomenal 14 years. And then, you know, I think our current president, you know, some people might like some aspects, some might like others. But I think he has been, on balance, you know, a very impressive president as well. But before that, it was seen as something that you did when your real career was over. So
Dev's the best example of that.
I think Dev is the best. Now, and De Valera, you know, has a remarkable career and an incredibly long career. But I do think by the time he became president in 1959 and then to serve the two terms, he was 77 becoming president. He was 91 leaving office. And this was in a time when, you know, being 77 wasn't the way it is now, where you can be a very sprightly 77.
Yeah,
we're, I think, a lot younger physically now and a lot healthier. So when he left office at the age of 91, he really wasn't in a good position. And that image then was of the president as, you know, old, you know, barely able to walk, barely able to see. And I think, you know, De Valera, you know, historians can and will debate his time in public life and his time as Taoiseach. But I think his time as president, that wasn't his greatest part of his career.
Well, listen, we're going to continue delving in to the history of the office of the president, of the different moments in time over the last 88 odd years since the 1937 constitution that it's found itself, for right or wrong, in the headlines with Patrick over the next few weeks. Patrick Egan, thank you very, very much. Patrick, of course, is director of the Trinity Long Room Hub and presenter of Talking History here on News Talk.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.